and welcome to another edition of No Filter Sports. Eli Zaret, Bob Page, and Denny McClain sitting across from me here in the studio. Bob, down in the shadow of Mar-a-Lago down there in West Palm Beach. I think we ought to dispense with the draft. Of course, we won't know for years whether it was a good draft or not, but people always have their opinions.
When was one good?
Well, there's been a lot of good drafts.
Which one?
Denny, you hate the draft. We don't hate the draft.
It's not that I hate the draft.
And that's the way they conduct themselves. That's the way they produce players. No problem with drafts.
You said on this program you don't think the NFL draft is even important.
No,
you
That's not what I said. You know what I mean? You
Brandon, let's go to the videotape.
The bottom line is simply this. Why televise it? I understand the first round. That I'll give you. But the rest of it's a waste of time.
Well, Denny,
it's
based on ratings.
And I understand that.
Listen, there's a lot of crappy TV shows that you think and I think are crappy that get ratings so people watch them. So I'm not going to judge it
I love the Avengers.
Will you shut the...
Easy.
I thought you turned it off. I thought you turned off the phone. You did, but you didn't.
Is that your cell phone again that you got on during the show, Denny?
He's so inept that he even tried to turn
it
off and couldn't turn it off. You know what? Just put it under something and let's not worry about it again. This is really pissing me off.
First of all, it doesn't get on the air.
We already started the show, so it's on the air.
Okay.
All right. Anyway.
Keep going.
What would Bryant Gumbel say in this situation?
Let's move on.
In fact, I remembered why you were so negative on the real sports thing, because Bryant nailed you about 15 years ago, and you don't like Bryant Gumbel, because he did an expose on you and HBO about 15 years
ago. It was no expose. It was just events in my life, and he distorted and lied about every one of them. That's all.
Outside of
7 out of 7, what else could he do?
First thing we need to do is clear up the great mystery about the National Football League draft. And the three of us will do that right now. And I'm going to do it this way. In what year did Ty Cobb come up with the Detroit Tigers?
1905.
You're wrong. The year was 1905.
That's the reason
I know that, because Roger Goodell kept saying in the 2020 draft. Now, a lot of other people were saying 2020. But Cobb came up in 1,905, according to these people. And the Chicago Black Sox scandal was 1,919, wasn't it? Why do people say that?
I don't know. I think we still haven't adjusted to the news.
What the hell is the point?
I don't know. But anyway.
The point is people say the year properly. The Detroit Tigers did not win the world championship in 1968.
Well, you could say 1968 instead of we say 1968. You're right. The 2019 draft, you should have said. Okay. Anyway, so it's in Nashville. You got 200,000 people crammed together on the streets. So the first thing I'm thinking is if I'm there, where's the porta potty? Because I can't stand an hour anywhere.
I go somewhere else.
But then
all those bars, they just jumped in the bars and out.
People are just so desperate for attention. So every time they name a player in the first round, the people that are dressed in the funny hats and the Green Bay Packer this and the Jacksonville Jaguar that, it's like kill them. They're on camera now and they jump up and down no matter who they've drafted because it's a TV show. And then the thing that got me is every player that comes out hugs Roger Goodell. Roger Goodell, the same man who depressed the rookie's wage scale, the same one that denied that football concussions lead to brain damage, and who makes $44 million a year to work for the owners, like he's one of them, like he's their pal, like he's their bud. Maybe it's just because he's the first guy they can hug. But I thought
at the end of the third round, my beloved New York Giants drafted.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Shane Zimini. He is a defensive end from Old Dominion. And these guys you're talking about, Eli, just in their Giants garment guys are jumping up and down. And the commentators on ESPN said, he knew it. He knew they were going to draft him.
You know,
it's like everybody, there's a blank look on their faces when they announce the name of their team's draft choice. Like, who? And then they start jumping up and down.
We're not even talking about it.
Because they see the red light of the camera go on.
We're talking about the production of the NFL. If people don't think the NFL is in cahoots with these guys on the streets, you're nuts.
Well, sure they are.
Absolutely.
I'm not saying they're paid actors, but they come down, they're trying to get on camera.
Absolutely. They want to get on camera. The NFL wants them on camera. They want to promote something that probably is not totally true, right? Like, oh, boy, this is the biggest thing in the world.
Or that I love Roger Goodell.
Goodell. Look, we all get to hug and kiss Roger Goodell. Guy who rips us off.
The players are certainly excited, and the sign of Chase Winovich when he got drafted in the third round, in the war room there was really, I thought, heartwarming because these guys have worked all their lives. But so, by the way, before we go on here, as ADD and senility again, the intersection.
No.
That there was this picture of the Lions war room where Martha Ford and her daughters were all sitting around as if they are integral parts of the draft. And the comment on it, he writes to us, this is Henry Lazarecki writes, says, I wonder if what these ladies are saying is, hey, let's pick that nice looking young man from Iowa. You know, and his point is, this picture says that all the Lions are doomed when you got the four ladies in the room. And Martha, who did, when they finally beat the Packers last year to extend their record to 6-10 or finish 6-10, said, what a wonderful way to end the season. So anyway.
So then the Lions select at one point Jelani Tavai.
Yes, we're going to talk about Mr. Tavai in a second.
The guys on TV blow this selection off. You know, one of the reasons why? They didn't have any highlights of him. Yeah. This is the Lions, second round choice?
Now, do you know why? Do you know why they don't have any highlights? Do you know why they don't have any highlights? Because they've never seen him play. Quinn has never seen a videotape of him.
Are you kidding?
Until after they picked him.
Well, that's
during
not true.
The draft.
What? Well, somebody did.
All right,
that. Really?
Let me read it to you. This is.
What are you quoting?
Quinn.
What are you quoting?
Quinn, I won't pretend to tell you I watched Tavai in action. Beyond a few highlights, shortly after the selection was made. Then, is that the way we draft?
Well, okay, but there has to be a good reason for taking him then. He didn't just throw a dart.
Must have hit him in the head with an ice cube,
What is the source of that article? Where's that from? What's
the
source?
Detroit News. Is that good enough for you?
You know, I thought I saw the news today. I didn't notice that. Look, if that's in the Detroit News, then what you're saying is true.
Saying this is the way we draw a parallel with the Patriots in New England. They say they are doing the same thing that the Patriots have been doing.
Right.
Why don't we see some winning then if they're trying to do the same thing?
Well, that's a great point that Quinn is now doing the Patriot way. But you know what? You know, that the stranger the pick that Belichick makes, it seems to reinforce him as a genius, an unconventional genius. But the fact
is, Eli, before you move on, this guy was picked number two on the list of Lions. Yeah, they haven't even seen a guy.
Well, some of his scouts must have seen it. Listen, he didn't go in there blind. Yeah.
This is the general manager. This is the number two guy. The general manager's not going to see the guy and sign him and give him some money without seeing him?
We're here in Detroit thinking that because he was a Patriot, meaning Quinn, and because Patricia was a Patriot, it's going to translate to Belichick's quirky ways that's going to work here. I'll give you an example. Maybe this is off the board. Al Horford did an amazing job on Giannis Antetokounmpo.
You just can't get
Antetokounmpo.
There, just
I did
just
it right.
Giannis.
Giannis. And so my point was, if the Pistons had Al Horford, would he have been able to stop Giannis? Of course not. It's all contextual with the rest of the team and the philosophy and all that.
That's a good point. But I want to say this also.
It's a good point.
We talk about this kid, Jelani Tavai, and the next pick, Sione Taki-Taki out of Brigham Young University. We don't know these kids either, and we don't know that they can play, and they might become stars. We don't know.
That is we shouldn't pretend that we can really understand. It may be a great draft. It may not be a great draft.
Yeah.
We don't know.
The general manager did not see him play.
Doesn't mean that
he's supposed. Wait a minute.
I'm not.
They hired him to be the genius behind the organization.
Well, maybe it was
the last genius they hired. By the way, was Matt Millen?
He wasn't the last one.
Yes, he was. They called him the greatest mind of all time.
No, so there's a man of towering intelligence.
intelligence.
Here's the point I'm trying to make about this. If I can get a word in edgewise.
Oh, really?
No kidding. You want a word in edgewise?
Hey, okay. Here's another letter. Tell Bob to shut up every day.
I want you to be aware of something.
I can't find it now.
Right now.
Oh, yeah. I really like the show and listen regularly, but Bob needs to let other people talk. Why does he monopolize the conversation? He can get a little boring. I want to hear more Eli and Denny. That's from Kathy T. Thank you, Kathy T.
Thank
but
you,
Bob,
Kathy.
You have the floor now. Go ahead. We're all ears. Go ahead.
Kathy, we're never speaking again. I thought we were tight boys. I thought we were good friends, and we're just never going to speak again. I mentioned in the last show, is that the same woman who hates it when I bring up New York?
No, that was somebody else.
That's another woman.
That was Patrick. That was Patrick.
Listen, Bob, we got 55 of them this morning.
That's all we're going to read,
though. Let me continue with that. Last show, I mentioned the infamous Jets drafting of Jeff Lockman out of Virginia and the amazing comment by Mel Kiper, who looked into the camera in 89 and said the Jets don't understand what the draft is about. And here's what Mel meant by that. He didn't mean that Lockman wasn't necessarily a good player or couldn't be a good player. You don't take him that high. You want Jeff Lockman, you like him, trade down and get him. This is what happened to the Giants when they drafted the Duke quarterback,
Daniel Jones.
It shocked the hell out of all of us. If you like Daniel Jones, fine. You think he's a future quarterback? He might be a great player. You don't pick him there.
Well,
trade down to get him.
Gettleman said, who's their GM, that he would have been gone by number 17 when they picked again. I don't believe that either. You're talking about the Free Press guys and whoever Kiper, and they're all talking about how the Lions are following a plan. They're drafting for his style of defense now, and so they're saying, well, why didn't he draft for his style of defense last year? Well, because they had Caldwell, or 2 years, because they had Caldwell. Then why didn't he fire Caldwell? Well, because Martha liked him, oy vey. And so here's what you have is. This kind of
You're not saying that Martha is picking the players.
No. But when Quinn came in, he would have liked to have started with the Patriot way right away. But the owner who hired him, 92-year-old Martha Ford, really liked Jim Caldwell, a very nice man.
Yes.
And he didn't want to fire him then because Martha liked him. So instead of doing it perhaps the way he would have been inclined to do it, he waited. So anyway, who's to say?
There's no reason to believe what those four women is in the room that they're picking anybody.
No, of course not. No, that's.
Well, no, don't say of course not. We haven't won a football game in years.
They're not picking.
They introduced.
When I say haven't won a football game in years, I'm talking about a game that meant something.
Right. Well,
With this talk about the FLs. It's a non-story.
That's okay. These are our Lions, the people we pull for, the people we hope will.
Your team
will
is the Chicago Bears. And
listen,
Eli
the last
the
time there was a playoff, you and I went to it.
That's right.
You realize that? That's how many years ago? 40?
1991.
30. You want to talk about the FLs? Number 8, they picked TJ Hockenson, the tight end from Iowa. Well, that kid's probably a really good player.
Yeah, he is.
But guess what? Exactly 5 years ago, they spent a number 10 choice overall on a tight end named Eric Ebron, okay? So it turns out they think Eric Ebron can't play. 4 years later, they get rid of him. So they have to spend another top number one draft choice get a tight end.
But they did that
after they messed up.
But in 09, they took Brandon Pettigrew with the number 20 pick in the first
absolutely.
Round.
So here's the thing. So the Lions let this guy go. Did you see what he did last year at Indianapolis?
He played very well and made the All-Pro.
He made the Pro Bowl.
Right.
That's fine.
Maybe he fit into that program better than he would have fit in here. Programs have got a lot to do with where people play well. But listen to me, Bob.
I know what you're saying.
The programs and the way they play have a lot to do with who they play for and what kind of programs they play in. It's right in baseball, football. Remember the old teams that played, small ball. Remember small ball? Whatever the hell that used to be. Same thing. They got to fit into the program. And what this guy's trying to imply is that some of these guys do. I wonder how many really would do.
Anyway, okay. So anything else on the draft? I think that's...
Yes, we do. We got one. Montez Sweat.
What?
How about Montez Sweat from Mississippi State?
What about
him? So this guy went in the first round draft choice. A lot of people don't remember this or know. Montez Sweat played for Michigan State. He was recruited by Mark D'Antonio, and he got kicked out of the program. He was kicked out of the Michigan State program.
Why?
And the feckless Michigan sports media has never, ever uncovered why he was booted off the Michigan State football team. Because you know what? They knuckle under to D'Antonio. They knuckle under to Michigan State. If you look at, remember when Max Bulla was suspended? Max Bulla was suspended just prior to the Rose Bowl game. And Michigan State, as they always do, they stonewalled the whole thing, and the feckless Detroit media, sports media, still has never, ever uncovered the reason why Max Bulla was suspended, your defensive leader.
Well, that'll be your work for the next week.
Yeah, I don't think so. And by the way, let me ask you a question.
Speaking of people being kicked off football teams, Mr. Hill,
Oh, Tyreek Hill, yeah.
Oh, my God.
That, what a just terrible, ugly story this is.
It's a terrible story, stuff. But, you know.
He broke a child's arm.
He broke his own son's arm. This is interesting because I was reading an article in USA Today by a woman named Nancy Armour, and she said Hill needs to be banished. Oh, by the way, did you hear the recording? There's the recording of him. It's a perfect recording, as if it was done in a studio like this. With it wasn't behind in a flower pot or under a pillow in a couch. It sounded like they were speaking into a microphone, and so it hasn't been confirmed that it's the real tape. They think
and
it is.
He never denies anything.
But I wonder how they, you know, in this day and age, the fact that everything that happens is on video or audio amazes me, even though we all have cameras.
Did you hear the whole tape?
I heard excerpts.
He never denied anything. That's right. What got me. He acquiesced so quickly.
It's on tape. How can you deny it?
That's my point. But he's right. It sounds like it was recorded in a studio.
On the tape, Hill denies abusing his son. But when Espinal, his girlfriend, who is the mother of his children, tells him his son is terrified of him, Hill responds, "You need to be terrified of me too, you dumb bitch."
Yeah.
So this, here's the thing.
I got
kicking him out of the league. Kicking him out of the league. It's not going to solve anything.
It's not the right way to go.
No. And she says that Nancy Armour, he needs to be banished immediately. The ban needs to be permanent. So Jerry Jones, some other owner with a flexible conscience, won't find himself tempted when he's in need of a wide receiver. I disagree.
And isn't she back with him now?
Yeah. Well, yeah, she's with him. And she recorded alleged, perhaps, you know. Anyway,
makes no sense.
He needs.
I got a couple. More
By the way, Adrian Peterson was let back in the league after a suspension. All but right. he needs rehab. He needs domestic abuse counseling. If you take the guy's career away as a punishment, how's that going to make him any better or to prevent another child from abusing down?
Well, there are players professional who, sports.
One
professional
second.
Athletes
one
are
second.
Not choir.
There are players. There are players right. who jumped up and defended him in the sense that don't kick him out. Let him go through a whole bunch of progressions and come back and play in the NFL.
That's what I say, too.
You know, I do, too. You got to give him another chance.
Years ago, I was interviewing John Sally for a Piston thing. He was in town, and we were doing the 50 greatest memories or something when I worked for that team. And something had happened like this. It may have been the Ray Rice thing. I'm not sure. And Sally said, and he's a black man, obviously, he goes, "They play this game. They are savages. It is a violent game, and they are savages." Now, that's a serious term to use, but This is what their profession is about, hurting people. Now they're incredibly skilled and very good at it, but the profession is built in aggression, inflicting pain, and knocking out quarterbacks. And so I guess not everybody can compartmentalize. I'm not making excuses for him.
I worked with Harry Carson for years on MSG in New York, the legendary Giants linebacker on Sunday nights during the football season.
Great player.
Harry once told me that the hardest adjustment he had to make to civilian life was controlling his anger and violence because he was an NFL linebacker. He said, just a simple thing, like a guy cutting me off in traffic, I'm going to run him off the road, get him out of the car, and kick his ass. Mm. He said, I realized, you know, I can't do that. But that's how they roll. Yeah, it's a good point. I also wanted to mention LJ Scott, one of the many local Michigan and Michigan State players, and of course from around the country, who were really good college players, were not drafted. LJ Scott had a chance to come back and play a fifth year at Michigan State. I don't know what's going on up there, if he's going to class or what's happening, but why would you come out to the NFL draft where you might get taken in the seventh round or nobody might take it instead of going back to play another season in college? This happens with so many of these guys. What are they thinking?
Well, I suppose if you're going to Baltimore signed LJ Scott as a free agent.
Yeah. Free agent.
It's all judging your professional capabilities. Yeah. LJ Scott just wants to be an NFL player.
Yeah.
And so he's not going back to Michigan State because he wants to get a postgraduate degree in molecular science.
Get better so he can be an NFL player and be drafted.
Then that's a professional decision. You're right.
And you know, a lot of people professionally allow their egos to get in the way too. I mean, they just think they have arrived and it's time to go. Yep. And it's the easiest thing in the world with all these people trying to get in the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball. Boy, it's one in a million that makes the grade.
Yep. He's probably tired.
It is. So the only other thing I got to say about the draft is actually through the form of a question to you guys. If you look back at any conversation you had with any woman over the last 2 or 3 months, any time you spoke with a woman, did you ever once during the course of your conversation with this woman look at her and say, oh, man.
Would I like to?
She's a woman. She's a woman. These college kids are going up there. Little Susie Colbert is interviewing every one of them. And every third comment is, oh, man. I'm so happy. Oh, man, I'm so happy to be here. She's not a man. I don't get that. I guess I'm old, and it's just modern, the new modern age.
Is that any different than they say one line, and they say, and you know what I mean. You know what I'm saying. I mean, is that any different than oh, man?
No, it's just a phrase.
Yeah, it is. It is a lot different because Susie Colbert is a woman last time I looked.
Well, they didn't say bro. They didn't call her bro. Now, that would have been a little more noticeable. But, this is interesting because is it Stephen Miller, the guy that was nominated for the Federal Reserve, and now he's got a backtrack by Trump, and now he's got a backtrack because he had written—
I believe Stephen Miller is a rock
not
and
Stephen
roll
Miller. No,
based
no,
in San
no,
Francisco.
No.
Steve Miller.
No. So Stephen Moore. Stephen Moore.
No.
Stephen Moore.
Yeah,
no,
Moore.
It's
that's
not
what
Stephen
it,
Moore.
It's Stephen Moore is the—and he wrote a column years ago that he has to apologize for. He wrote in 2002 about against women in sports. And really, it's the same thing a lot of us say. Do you really want to see a female sideline reporter? And a lot of sexism comes out on our parts, too, because men kind of think that it should be our domain, at least, male sports. Anyway, before we go on here.
Well, one day we'll do that. I've got a lot to say about things like that. I was there when it first started, and it was really uncomfortable.
Melissa Ludke of the Sports Illustrated was the first one to go
to
the locker room.
Eli, Patty, Denny, Sharon, did they watch the NFL draft on Friday night?
Of course not.
No.
Of course not. You know who did? My old lady.
No.
And I said, honey, why would you watch NFL draft?
Because you only got one TV.
It was so great. No, she was in New York at that time.
Oh.
She's before coming down here. So
she
said, because they started the show and Taylor Swift came on and Taylor Swift was singing. I took when ESPN switched over to ABC at the end of their coverage, I thought I was watching New Year's Rockin' Eve. They're cutting the quote unquote celebrities. Now let's go to this celebrity who's going to interview this celebrity. Of course, guys our age, we've never heard of any of the quote unquote celebrities. Quite a presentation. But again, they kicked ass in the ratings. So I read.
Yep. Anyway, it's summertime. Wouldn't it be great this summer to not have to, when you're going swimming?
Before you move on, can I ask a question? What kind of a rating did they have?
I don't know.
Kind of a rating?
But it's a cable show, and it probably did pretty well.
Okay. I'm going to find out.
All right. Anyway, like I was saying, Denny, it's the summertime.
It is.
You want to go swimming and playing sports. You don't want to
summertime, and it's 33 degrees outside.
You don't want to have.
Didn't it snow in Michigan last week?
Yes, it did.
Snowed up there, didn't it?
Guys,
yes. Summertime.
Aren't we lucky?
Shh, I'm doing a sponsored read.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, so
yes,
let's try not to interrupt.
How are your eyes doing?
My eyes are great.
Dr. Yaldo?
And the reason my eyes are great is that Dr. Yaldo gave me multifocal lens implants in 2017.
I wish I had them.
Now I can read. Look at the tiny print. This is 9-point print. No problem.
I can't even see the paper.
9-point type. Every time I open my eyes, it's like I'm sitting in front of my big screen 4K.
God has appeared.
And so you should, too. Make the phone call. People just put this off. And the number one thing I hear after LASIK or after multifocal lens implants is, why did I wait so long? Why didn't I just do this? It is a big step to make, but be done with old technologies. He's done 30,000 LASIK procedures. If you're 40 or under and you're tired of your contacts and tired of wearing glasses and they sweat up and you can't go swimming, you whatever, just make the phone call. It's a free evaluation at 1-800-398-EYES.
The reason you waited so long is because you couldn't land the account until recently.
No. I got LASIK from him in 2000, but then you lose your reading vision.
But he did it free for you.
Well, that's because he was my client. He was my client.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, I'm your—
Can he finish your commercial? I'll just say this.
I'm your friend.
He's like on his hands and knees, that's because he can't walk anyway, begging me for a free surgery.
Eli and I have been close friends for 45 years, right? And it took me so long to get used to seeing him without glasses. He just looked like a different person. It probably took me 2 years to adjust that. Like looking at you without glasses, Danny, it would take me 2 years to adjust to that.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, he's the best. He's done 30,000 LASIK procedures, number one in the state, 30,000 happy
patients. And I keep
waiting
for my appointment.
Just call 1-800-398-EYES or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com and support.
Yeah, you know, as they say, the gods help themselves. The reason he's waiting for his appointment is because he ain't called yet.
I can't see the numbers on the phone.
Brandon is raising his hand. Yes, Brandon.
To answer your question, The 2019 NFL draft set Nielsen records this year. It had a 3.9, an average viewership of 6.1 million, up 10%.
Is that good? 3.9?
It's phenomenal.
Brandon, that's great news, but you said 2019. Now, you know, Bob doesn't approve of you saying the date that way.
Bob doesn't like that.
So you should have said the 2019.
So, Brandon, do some more research. Tell us who the number one overall pick was in the draft of 1,986, okay?
I was 2 years old. I don't remember.
But, you know, one last thing about that. You see, Denny, you were saying it doesn't matter. Now, I went back because I figured, you know, a third-round draft pick, what good is that? So I looked at the Lions' third-round. Look at this. Third-round draft picks, starter. Kenny Golladay in 2017, starter, third round, Graham Glasgow, 16, starter, Travis Swanson, third round, 14, starter, Larry Warford, third round, 13, and let's see who else, DeAndre Levy, third round in 09. So you can get great players. I agree
with
you.
That's not my point.
I agree. It's bad television, but don't say it doesn't matter after the first 10 picks.
But wait a minute. If you're into this thing, and I think people are peripherally to a point, they watch it. Most people watch it for the first round.
You're right.
That's it.
Okay.
And that's the excitement, because the guys they talk about are the stars.
I didn't watch it after the first round. Right. I'm with you on that. Only Bob's girlfriend, Laura, watched it after the first round.
She didn't watch it after the first round either, but I did, and Brandon did. Our producer, Brandon McAfee, by the way, if you don't know.
Okay. Now, we watch. I made a bitch before the show about traffic lights and people not moving. I got another bitch, and this is very self-serving. I think I'd
be
like
careful
to,
with this.
I'd like to segue into
you
the
got another bitch.
I'd like to segue into the Tigers now, if I can.
Please.
So, the 84 Tigers knew so much about your team because every rain delay on Detroit television and Channel 4 and later Pass or however for 10 years was the 68 World Series with Kurt Gowdy doing the play by play.
Well, now it's 84.
So and your friend Bill Dow and I were talking about this also. So the beat writers in 1984 were Tom Gage and Bill McGraw, not interviewed. They interviewed Joe LaPointe and Lynn Henning. Good interviews, but they weren't the beat writers. And they didn't interview me. And you know what? I'm pissed. They should have. I wrote a book on them. Nobody knew that team better. I'm sure they got a lot of the information my book.
And you know what? You're not just tooting your own horn. In 1984 pregame show with Eli, everybody watched the pregame show with you on that thing. And they should have interviewed you. Of course, they should have. And they messed up. And how about Jim Hawkins, by the way? Wasn't he the Free Press beat writer during the 84 season?
I don't know.
I don't know if he was still there then.
He was doing card shows at the
time. I think he had stepped aside. Yeah. But McGraw was. Gage was. And Gage is a Hall of Famer. Yeah. So listen, I'm not going to knock Fox Sports Detroit, but and it's self-serving, but I'm feeling a little miffed. Just a little miffed. Because nobody knew the personalities on that team better than I do. And there's a lot of things I could tell about those personalities that I haven't, which shows that
From this moment on, I'll wear always a new shirt, and you can cry on my shoulder whenever you want to cry.
God, I've been bitching a lot today. Yes, Brandon.
What's the matter with you today?
We just talked. Brandon, see, he's polite. We should raise our hand. We want to talk. Brandon's polite enough to raise his hand.
Okay.
Yes.
I actually have to, and I'm sorry. I have to interrupt the show for a moment.
It's okay, Brandon.
There's somebody here.
Here?
Yeah. There is somebody in the driveway that's saying that Denny is supposed to sign all of his autographs.
What?
Somebody named Carl.
You mean in the driveway right now?
Yeah, I'm getting all these messages.
No.
Oh, you make sure this
stays on the show. I want this to stay on the show because this is the industry known as Dennis Dale McClain. He's up in Boston doing a card show signing over the weekend. He meets Juan Marichal. I must have talked to Juan Marichal for an hour. I didn't understand three words that he said.
Six.
So this is how Denny lives.
I said six.
This is how Denny lives.
Denny?
Yes.
Tell the guy to wait, okay?
Yeah, tell him to wait.
I love this.
Is somebody stalking you?
Did you almost?
Listen, this guy is stalking me.
So check this out. So here's another.
What would Howard Cosell say at this very moment?
Let's move on.
And now, back to the sports.
Now, our line, which you didn't mention, you were supposed to mention after I read the Yaldo spot, 760-89-BALLS.
Right.
You can leave a text or a voicemail, or you can email us at ask nofilter@gmail.com. So along this lines of some stalker who you probably owe money to who followed
First
you
First of all, I don't owe anybody any money.
And how does he know you're here? How does
he
know you're here?
That's what I want to know. How do you stalk
you
me over here?
You get back to the show now.
This guy...
I don't get this.
Unnamed caller says... Really like this. great podcast. Really like listening to you guys. I met Denny 13 years ago in Chesapeake, Virginia at an autograph signing. He was a hell of a nice guy, was able to shoot the S with him for a while, and I'm glad to see he's doing well. I'm a lifelong supporter. I will say, and I'm going to give him a compliment here, nobody has suffers the fools the way Denny McLean does at these shows. How many times would we be out together and say, just tell this guy to get lost. It's just leeching onto you. There's other people in line.
Schmoozer.
Don't talk to him.
Now, you know what, since we're on this subject, I got a question for Denny, and it came up with me over the weekend. I thought, as long as I've known you, I've never asked you this. You make a lot of money, travel all over the country doing these shows. Has anybody ever come up to you and wanted to talk about your time in prison or the fact that you owed him money from something like this? Have you ever had a negative experience with fans?
No.
Never. Not one.
I don't think so. Not that I'm aware of.
All right.
And we don't police the event. We don't tell to keep people away. We don't do any of that. And we do 150, 175 dates a year. So, I mean, if somebody wants a chance to something here, there, anywhere, they're more than welcome to do it.
Brandon,
and you know what? I would talk to him.
Is the guy in the driveway armed? Do I have to, like, not make sure I leave the building with him?
He looks harmless. He says he's been working with Denny for 6 months on getting something signed.
I think he's smoking dope.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but how did he get here?
Do you know?
I have no idea.
Because if he's smoking dope, he's not going to shoot him. I know that.
Yeah, he doesn't look like the kind that smokes.
You don't think he's going to kiss me, do you?
I don't know.
Okay.
I have no idea.
Anyway, did he leave or is he waiting for him to come later?
He will stay as long as it takes, he says.
Well, I'm not leaving. Man. I'm not leaving until tomorrow.
True. You got a spare room?
You tell this guy when you see him that he cost me 10 minutes of this show. That guy cost me 10 minutes of
Sorry,
this show.
Guys.
Now, can we move on or not?
All right. Let's talk about the Tigers.
Hey, so we just picked up 10 minutes.
Meanwhile, it was fascinating Friday night when Jose Abreu passed.
Yes.
Or, no, did he? Yeah, he passed
the
shortstop.
I mentioned the last show about Dalton Jones' Grand Slam single. Right. Which you guys hadn't heard of for whatever reason. I was kind of talking off the top of my head. I said it was 67. I didn't know what year it was.
70, right. July 9th, 1970. Seventh inning at Tiger Stadium. Jones pinch hit for Jim Price. I can't believe Price got pinch hit for.
Oh, my God. Not Jim Price being pinch hit for
Jim Price. They have a book out called A Pinch Hit for the Greats.
Anyway.
I read that in that book.
Bases loaded. Jones hammered the 2-2 pitch to the upper deck. Grand slam past Don Wirt between first and second, called out. Yeah. Ended up with a 3-RBI single. So here's my question after what happened Friday night. Situational baseball. Bases loaded, 2 out. Batter hits a home run.
No, because the runners are running anyway if it's 2 out. There was 1 out. When
Everybody's
running. I think it was 1 out when
Okay. Here's a situational baseball. For
What's
you.
The count?
Okay. It doesn't matter what the count is.
Sure it does. 3-2, they're running.
Okay. It's a 1-1 count.
Okay.
And it's a high fly ball that may or may not go out of the ballpark, okay? Their runners are holding their bases.
They can't. Not with 2 out. They're running.
I said it's 1 out. Damn it. 1 out. 1-1 count on the batter.
Yeah.
Bases loaded. Long fly ball. Everybody holds or is just a foot or two off the base to see whether it's out or whether it's caught.
Okay.
The ball leaves the ballpark for a grand slam, but the batter passes the runner at first, just like happened to Jose Abreu. What is the ruling?
The other run scores.
As long as he doesn't get to second base, the hitter.
No. The minute he passes the runner.
No, not
the umpire. He passes the runner.
I'm the umpire.
Okay. Then you answer. Okay.
You're going to tell us about your umpiring today, too.
Okay, so tell me what the ruling is.
Yeah, tell us what the ruling is.
He passes
First of all, the guy who hits the ball is called in the rule book the batter runner. Batter runner passes a guy on first base. He's declared out. That's number two.
Okay.
But since it's not the third out, all three runs score, hence grand slam single.
Wrong.
You're wrong. You're absolutely 100% wrong.
No, wait. Time out. There's two outs.
Wait a minute. You said there
I'm
was
taking
one.
A bet. Because you guys threw it. There's 2 outs, a 1-1 count. And the same thing happens, okay? The same thing. He passes the runner first. What is the ruling?
Ruling is batter runner's out, inning is over. It's the third out, and no run score.
He's right. So you hit a grand slam and
I was
no
a serious
runs.
Umpire, fellas. You don't. You
what the hell does
stand.
Serious. What did you do? You umpired high school, Little League? Okay, what you did you umpire?
Okay, fine. When I was 18 and old enough to play American Legion baseball.
Were you shaving
let then?
Let him finish.
When I was 18 and old enough to play American Legion baseball, I was umpiring American Legion baseball.
Who
when
cares if you were playing?
Let him finish.
When I was 21 and a college student at Michigan State, I was umpiring major college baseball. Ask Bob Miller how many UAD games I did. So I went to umpire development school, Major League Umpire Development School in 1973.
Who paid for that?
Stop. Let me ask him one more quickie, okay? Because I want to get him. I want to get him, okay?
We got him once already. Go ahead.
Runners on first and second.
You used to do this show, as a matter of fact. That was a good show. Time out. Baseball rules.
Right.
Yeah.
Runners on first and second. Nobody out. So the batter tries to bunt them over. But he pops it up 20 feet in the air between home and the mound. The pitcher, though, lets it fall and starts a third to second to first triple play. Manager races out to demand the umps invoke the infield fly rule. What is the call?
Go ahead.
That's pretty interesting because, again, if a fielder deliberately drops a ball to get a force out, then the umpires stop play and they call him out anyway.
Yes.
That's what happens. And by the way, Danny goes like this for those of you who can't see, which is everybody. He puts his right thumb and he holds it in the air for out. Do you know how many laps you're running at umpire school if they ever see you making an out call or a strike call with your thumb in the air?
No, I'm the guy that
laps,
I'm
the
guy.
By the way, you're wrong.
I'm the guy that the umpires like to work
with. Well, I didn't really answer the question.
You didn't answer the question. The manager races out to demand the umps invoke the infield fly rule. Does the triple play stand? In other words, first and second, nobody out. The batter attempts to bunt them over, but he bunts it up in the air between home and the pitcher, and the pitcher lets it fall.
What is it,
and
Bob?
Then starts a third to second to first triple play. The manager races out and says the infield fly rule should be called. What's the rule?
Remember, if you've read the rule book and you haven't about the infield fly rule, the key clause is if in the umpire's
opinion,
judgment.
Right.
Exactly. So you can't come out and argue an opinion. My opinion.
Can I explain this? You're not going to.
So what's the ruling? Go ahead. What's the rule?
If the ball is catchable, the batter is out. Infield fly rule. Period. It's over. It gets down to the umpire's judgment. It's, you know, first of all, the pitcher, if this is the guy we're talking about, must have made to look like he was making an attempt to catch it.
Except, you're right, except there's one exception.
Also,
let me finish.
Give you a better example.
Okay.
I saw Dick McCullough caught one or two line drives at second base and dropped them with men on first and second and tried to get a triple play. Throw in a second, throw in a first. All right? Period.
Can't do it.
It was an infield fly rule.
Here's the difference. Bunted balls are not part of the infield fly rule. Wrong,
course,
Denny.
Yeah. Yes, they are.
Wrong, Bob.
They are.
Wrong,
Bob,
Denny. Wrong, Bob.
Bob, I agree.
Case
with
closed.
You. They are a part of the.
They're not.
Fly
it's rule. A rule.
They are. Okay. It's a judgment of an umpire.
Whether it's a bunt or not?
Yes, absolutely.
No, nonsense.
No,
Eli,
no,
if that's
no.
what the rule book says, and I haven't read the rule book in a long time.
Aha,
good for you.
Okay,
good
there
point.
You go. Anyway, I just wanted to somehow dispel that umpires know all the rules because they don't. And Bob
here's
was a great umpire.
He's
a great American Legion and a great collegiate umpire.
The Little
I know
that,
he told me.
You try it, pal. They would have run great. You off the field inside in a half of an inning. Here's the great thing and the important thing to remember about this, and we'll settle the discussion this way. When former Detroit Tiger Ike Brown quit baseball and retired,
play with him?
He became an umpire.
He did.
In the minor
That's
league.
Right. He yeah. did. He did.
So, yes, he did. And so one day somebody was talking to Ike Brown and said, well, Ike, what's the difference between being a baseball player and an umpire? He says, well, as a baseball player, you only got to know some of the rules. As an umpire, you got to know most of them.
Most of them.
Oh,
true story. God. Anyway,
Ike, by the way, was a hell of a guy. Just a great gentleman.
The Tigers strike out 20 times yesterday.
Yep.
They struck out 32 times in the two-game series.
Yep.
I don't want to just point to them because strikeouts are
way
an
up.
Epidemic yep. in all of baseball. But
Matt Boyd pitched six innings in that Sunday game and struck out nine, so the Red Sox were whipping too.
Yeah, yeah.
The White Sox.
Instead, he strikes out. High fastball, got him. And a strikeout to lead off the second for Detroit. There's the 3-2, and he swung and missed anyway. Swung on and missed. 3-2. Got him swinging. Second time he's punched out Cabrera. Here's the 0-2 to Brandon Dixon.
Sure.
And he went around. Ah. Ninth strikeout of the day for Ronaldo Lopez. Got him looking. He's done. Rings him up. Got him again. Here's the 2-2. Struck him out. That's his 14th of the game.
Does that mean the pitching is that good, or does it mean the hitters are that bad? Let me hear this.
That's a good question. I think it's got to be a combination of both.
It is not a good question.
It is
yeah.
not a combination.
You just think people can't
the
hit anymore?
The hitters are bad. The hitters are bad. The hitters. Yeah. We got too many AA, AAA players in the major mm-hmm. leagues right now. I think we would all recognize that.
And,
right?
and they're all trying to hit the long ball.
Everybody wants to hit a home run. Right. I was watching or listening to the Houston game last night, and lo and behold, they got men on. This is now the way baseball used to be played. Men on first and second, nobody out. The leadoff man is up. What should you do?
First and second, nobody out?
And they're two runs down. Yep. What should you do? First and second, nobody out. You're two runs down. What should you do? Your leadoff hitter is up now.
No outs?
No outs.
Are you saying you're supposed to bunt him over to men on second and third?
You have to bunt him over.
So that you can hit, so a single scores two.
You have to, right. And you know what happens?
They try to hit a three-run homer.
Ground ball, double play.
Yeah.
Thing I hate about these kinds of arguments, and Denny, if you'll indulge Eli and me here for just a moment, we're going to go back to our childhood baseball cards. And Eli and I both had baseball cards of Vito Valentinetti.
See, I didn't.
Arnold Porter Carrero.
Oh, Arnie Porter Carrero.
A lot of baseball cards of these guys. So don't tell me these guys, we have too many AAA players today. The influx of Latinos has saved baseball. We got so many more great players now than we ever used to have. There are plenty of AAA tweeners. Look at the Detroit Tigers roster.
I don't care where they come. They can come from the moon. I don't care. But I'm telling you, the hitters today are not anywhere near the major leaguers used to be. And let me tell you why. Because they don't stay in the minor leagues long enough to learn the game. Number one, learn the game. Mm-hmm. Listen, they all come in as pretty good players. And I will admit that. Most of these kids can really play. But they don't get into a situation where the repetition
year after year, right?
That they play year after year, 2, 3, 4 years in the minor leagues makes all the difference in the world.
And Al Kaline never played a game in major minor
leagues. He's a Hall of Famer. He's an exception.
For God's sakes, we're talking Hall of Famer.
It's also launch angles and trying to hit home runs, and they know that, and you got to get the ball in the air because the stats that a ball
the
on the
analytics,
ground.
The analytics are making guys want to hit home runs, and everybody wants to be able to hit that fastball on the inside part of the plate because that's where you jerk the ball out of the ballpark. Not everybody can get their hands down there.
Ted Williams say about that? Home run hitters drive Cadillacs. Singles hitters drive Fords.
So what?
Everybody wants to make a lot of money, and that's how you do it.
That's okay. That's true, Danny, but you're right.
Absolutely.
You're right.
He's talking Al Kaline and Ted Williams. Right. Those are the exceptions to the great
rules. So I got a pitching question for you. So
For Bob?
No, for you.
I don't claim to be a great pitcher. I never claim to be a pitcher.
That's your best line of the day. So, Jordan Zimmermann, who's now hurt again, and by the way, the Tigers
isn't this something?
Tigers three top pitchers, Fulmer, Moore, and now Zimmermann are all hurt. Yeah. So, Jack was a pretty good pitcher, better than you because he's a Hall of Famer and you're not. Just kidding, Denny. I'm sorry. But anyway. So Zimmermann, the first two games, breaking ball, just diving. He looked
great.
At the pitch.
Terrific.
And Jack said something. He said, you see this pitch, it's just spinning. And it was just spinning, but it wasn't breaking. So you'd think if you can put the spin on the ball, it's going to break. Why does some that spin break and some that spin don't break? Or is he just not spinning it as fast as he was spinning it the first two games?
I believe, based upon what I saw, the last two games when he's been beat up pretty good, he's not on top of the ball anymore. In other words, a good guy who can throw a real good breaking ball is on top.
So it breaks down.
Right. So what he's doing right now, he's got his arm somewhere between overhand and three quarters, and all you're going to do is spin it. Jack is right. All you're going to do is spin it out there. The ball's not going down from out there.
Well, shouldn't it should spin left, right to left then? But that's
of course it
but
should.
But that doesn't fool the hitter
but
as much.
Does, no. It's a hanger.
Yeah.
If you go out there and start throwing a slider from a three quarter arm action, you are going to give up a lot of base hits, and the ball's going to spin and hang. We all know what a hanger is. That's a ball that goes 480 feet, right? I know what the sound is of a 480-foot home run, and I know
what
I'm
sure you do.
Oh, baby,
sure
let me
you
tell
do.
You.
But I got a question for you here about this. So you are certainly a public person. You're not the hardest guy in the world to get in touch with by any means.
No.
Have you ever, over the last 15 to 20 years, received a phone call at home or on your cell from a Major League Baseball pitcher, perhaps with the Tigers or in the minor leagues. Mr. McClain, my name is Joe Blow. I'm pitching at AAA Toledo. Would you mind talking to me just a little bit? I got some questions. Have you ever gotten a call like that from a pitcher?
Yeah, Eli can tell you a story about the kids who come up to me when we were...
We were on the road in the minor leagues. They would swarm him to ask the young pitchers to ask
good.
A question, but they didn't call him on the phone necessarily.
No, but they would come by and they'd ask me how I threw my slider, how I threw my curveball and what have you. And I get calls all the time, literally all the time, from fathers who want somebody to show them when it's time for them to throw a curveball or a slider, because I got one great big thing I tell everybody, until this kid gets to be 18 or 19 years old and is strong enough, because
throw a curveball.
Everybody's got to develop. And you know what? They fail to realize you got to develop your shoulder and your elbow and everything else that's on the side where you're going to throw the ball. So, and most people want to win more than they want to give a kid a chance.
Well, and I know you would tell the story that your dad, who you lost at a very young age, tragically so, who was your mentor, I think you came home when you were 13 or 14 and your arm hurt. And he said, you've been throwing curveballs.
Yep.
And I don't know whether you lied or told him the truth. Actually, telling the truth would have surprised me.
Yeah. He said, if I ever catch you throwing another curveball, you will not have to worry about pitching ever with anybody
else. Smart guy. He understood baseball.
My dad
told me the same thing. My dad, and I never pitched in the big leagues. Don't throw a curveball. Sure. You're too young.
And they let him do it today. They let him do it. I go out, and the first question I ask a kid when I'm going to work with them is, hey, you got a good curveball? Oh, yeah, Mr. McClain, I got a good one. You want to see it? If I see it while I'm out here, I'm leaving. What do you mean, Mr. McClain? We don't throw curveballs at the age of 16.
I watch the League World Series, and they're
terrible, isn't it?
They're throwing curveballs.
Always have been.
The problem there is they want to win so damn bad they don't care about the child.
When I was 12, I guess, well, you're 1 year older than I'm, Eli, but I mean, we all used to watch the World Series finale from Williamsport on ABC's Williamsport. When I was 12, I was on my all-star team, and we got eliminated in the second round of the Little League World Series that year. So that year, a kid named Danny Yaccarino from a place I'd never heard of, Staten Island, New York, pitched Staten Island to the Little League World Series. And you're sitting there, poor, I wonder if I could hit that guy, throwing this huge
kid to throw from both sides, is it?
But let me tell you something. What's that? No.
Okay.
No. Let me tell you something. Danny Yaccarino wound up becoming a firefighter on Staten Island. He never left. Blew his arm out throwing curveballs like that at age 12 in the Little League World Series. It happens to a lot of kids.
The arm can't take it. Cannot take it.
Well.
All right. So anyway, since we have a little lull in the show, I want to make one statement.
We'd like to talk about.
I want to make one statement.
Okay.
God, I love Draymond Green. Jesus, he is this kid. He will do anything to beat you. He doesn't care if it's dirty work. He doesn't care if he scores a point. That was, as we all thought, a war Sunday in the first game of the Golden State Houston series. And here's Draymond out there. He's in Kevin Durant's face all the time, but not in an angry way. He's coaching Kevin Durant, believe it or not. This is what we need, what we want you to do, so on and so forth. And he was still talking to him after the game. Draymond's obviously is a little too emotional, but he's so competitive. He gets all these technical fouls. He's so competitive. He wants to win so bad he can't control his emotions.
Well, you know,
I love this kid. I just love this.
Durant is a fascinating story for several reasons, because the big story all season long in the NBA is that Durant is going to leave the Warriors.
Go to New York.
And go to New York. And this is, you know, free agency put the power in the players' hands. The only in sports weren't you allowed to pursue your dreams. And so people are saying, why would he want to leave? And there's a lot of reasons why he wouldn't want to leave. He wants to get that respect by winning in New York, the toughest place in the world. That he wasn't just a guy who went from town to town trying to win championships.
I'm not sure if he's looking for respect. I always, when I played in the big leagues and I was at the end of my career, I wanted to go to New York. I asked to go to New York when I was in Texas. And Short wouldn't trade me. Instead, he sent me to Oakland and sent me to Atlanta with Eddie Matthews, which was a nightmare. But I wanted to go to New York for one reason, because I thought whether you win or not there, you become something bigger than life. And with bringing the resume that I had, I thought we could do something and maybe make some extra money at that point in time. And because back then, guys, we only made 50, 60 grand
if
a
you
year.
Do well, you're bigger than life.
That's right.
If you don't, then you're a little tiny pipsqueak.
The thing about Durant is, and the reason I disliked him going to Golden State, and Golden State has proven they can win world titles without Kevin Durant, is because he impinged upon the game of the other guys. Steph Curry is not Steph Curry anymore. 3 years ago, you'd watch every Golden State game because you never knew. He might get 50, might get 55. They don't have two basketballs. So Durant's taken up so many of these shots. Then you got Klay Thompson taking up so many shots. Steph is still Steph in the sense of his talent, but he just doesn't get the shots anymore, and he's likely not going to go off and score a lot of points, and I miss that.
Do you think there's some conflict between him, the two guys?
Between
There's
Steph and
between
Durant?
Draymond and Kevin Durant. I don't think so. No. I haven't seen that at all. If they're smart, the guy they really want to re-sign is Boogie Cousins. Because if you look back at Golden State's recent history, they're moving these centers, these second-string centers, in and out almost every year who start for them.
JaVale Boogie McGee Cousins, and then Andrew Bogut.
There's so many of these guys. The kid who plays for the Pistons right now, he was starting center for Golden State, too.
Zaza
Pachulia, of course. So, I mean, I think Golden State is still going to be winning world championships, even if Kevin Durant does go to New York or wherever he wants to go.
Yeah, it was with Draymond that that's what he said. That's why I'm out, was his quote after he fought with Draymond early in the season. But and also, I would like to be Kyrie Irving also, because Kyrie Irving can opt out of his contract with the Celtics, and he and Durant could go to the Knicks.
He's kind of a knucklehead.
He's
kind of a knucklehead. I don't know about that. I know this, though.
But a great player.
I watched Draymond get into it, not in an angry way, with Steve Kerr on the sidelines yesterday during a point in the game where he'd been called for a technical. 3 feet away was sitting Doris Burke. 3 feet away, the NBA reporter. She heard every word that was said, never went to her, never report, oh, let's not go there, let's not touch that. I didn't like that either. And as usual, I hated watching James Harden. I don't care if he's the MVP. I don't care if he scores 50 points a game, if he leads the league. What a train wreck.
I have a question.
This guy comes down. They stand around. Four guys stand around and watch him until he dribbles for 22 seconds, fakes to the open man, and takes the fadeaway 38-foot jump shot and often misses badly.
And he tried to get the foul at the end. It was a good no-call because he jumped 4 feet forward with 3 seconds to go.
I have a question. Is Durant the best player in the NBA right now?
I think he is. He's the greatest 6'11 player that ever lived.
I've ever seen. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah, greatest.
Unbelievable.
That's a good question. I don't know. I didn't really have to think about that because these guys obviously play different positions on different teams and they mean different things to their teams. I have to think about it. Is he the most talented player in the NBA right now? Maybe, but Steph Curry's way up there.
Who influences the team more, Durant or Curry?
I think Durant kind of runs the show.
Now he does, but they can win world championships with Steph influencing the team, as I just said.
So the other great 6'11 guy was the guy that we saw, Giannis Antetokounmpo. Oh, God, hey! Yes.
That's not bad. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Pretty good that time.
So here, and I mentioned Al Horford early on, but Reggie Miller said, I think it was in Game 4 against the Pistons, if this guy gets a jump shot, it's all over. He is the next Jordan plus. And I kind of agree with that. But here's the thing. I'm watching the Celtics destroy the Bucks at home in Milwaukee by 20-some points.
Yes,
and I'm thinking,
just the other day.
Yeah, I'm thinking, so Milwaukee beats the Pistons by an average of 25. They lose by 25 to the Celtics. Thank God the Pistons didn't play the Celtics. But the point being, I said it then, and everybody told me I was crazy. The Pistons would have been better off not making the playoffs and looking like the inept team that they are.
I didn't think you were crazy. What are you talking about?
I didn't either.
I said that 100%. You argued with me.
I must just be paranoid and insecure then.
No. I still think it is a part of your experience in your resume to play in the playoffs. Listen, most guys will learn something about themselves when they go to that level in any professional sport. And I think they probably learned something, and we'll find out before any of us die that they get through the first round.
From a fan engagement standpoint, though, after watching that and then watching Milwaukee get taken to school by the Celtics.
I couldn't believe that. They didn't bother to show up. You know, I used to read the Philadelphia 76ers box scores all the time, religiously. They were so entertaining. Sixers might lose by 8. Allen Iverson, 37 points on 8 of 31 shooting. And that's just about what's going on with James Harden yesterday. Yeah. He scored 35, 9 for 27 shooting.
What's wrong with him right now?
I don't think anything's wrong with him. It's just
hell of a player, though.
The playoffs are tough.
He's a hell of an offensive talent, but he's playing against a pretty good basketball team right now.
The way the Celtics played defense on Milwaukee, the way they made Antetokounmpo totally
irrelevant. Don't think about it.
And you know what? And the fact that he got 27 points, because the only way he could score was shooting three-pointers. He couldn't get inside. And I don't like the way he just with that Euro step, he just takes off for the basket and knocks over people like bowling pins, and half the time they don't call it when they should.
Watching this guy is like the proverbial train wreck, and Iverson was the same way. Eli, you covered him for years.
So
like you can't look away. It may be a horror, but you can't look away.
Denny wants to get to this story about the courtroom thing where the guy claimed that he paid Michigan players, but I wanted to mention because Dabo Sweeney signed a $94 million contract to coach Clemson. So now, you know, you got Saban at 8.5 or whatever it is, and now he's over $9 million. And he said, "I'm grateful and humbled by the incredible commitment Clemson has made to me, my family, and our football program. With this contract, we make a collective statement. We intend to continue pursuing championships and developing total student athletes for years to come."
You know what I don't?
And that's the operative term here, because he does such a wonderful job educating the student athletes who play football for Clemson University.
That's right.
So that's why they're paying him so much
money. Bob, you don't see anything funny about it? 94?
It's ridiculous.
I mean,
only because
it's a capitalist society. How much money?
I never begrudge anybody.
How much money do you think he makes for Clemson?
Don't talk over each other, boys, please.
I don't begrudge anybody for making $1 billion. I don't care. The bottom line is, we're talking about kids.
Yeah,
and the kids get nothing. They get an education, maybe.
Well, that's another can of worms. Yeah.
Well, it's always going to be a can of worms.
We've discussed this a lot.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
so what? We have to. When a guy gets
Michigan football players.
When a guy makes $94 million, we're going to discuss it again.
Yeah. Go ahead. Righteously, Denny.
Anyway, this guy.
You pissed him off now today, Bob. You've really done it again. You made us with a whole show without pissing him off.
This guy is a former Pittsburgh money man.
That'll be when one of us isn't on the show. When
all right,
he's
Bob,
not
just
the
keep screaming.
Then I'm pissing him off.
Marty Blazer, testifying for the government, is now making all kinds of allegations, including Michigan's players that he has paid in the past.
Now, that's basketball or football?
This is all sports. And he's a rat for the government. He's testifying every day. He's paying these kids. He says only terminology was he was only paying them for $100 to $3,000 a month. What is the difference of $100 or $3,000 other than the amount?
Well, for a kid with no money,
But you know what? Listen, and the schools do a lot more maybe for the kids than he does, because this is chump change money to begin with. And although the kids, if they're good, they're going to go to the NBA or the NFL or MLB, but I just this must go on every day at every university in the country.
None of this is surprising. It's the outgrowth of a phony economy based on the arbitrary system designed under the guise of amateurism to profit from the free labor of basketball players and football players.
Do you find anything funny about Michigan saying we don't know anything about it?
There's no such thing in life as a free lunch.
No.
Somebody is getting paid somewhere.
Yep.
And the cat has been out of the bag for a long time with college sports. It's too late to start over. There's no logical relationship with the college mission and sports teams. It's just a multi-billion-dollar business that uses college logos and loyalty as a front. So we all love college sports to watch.
Yep.
It is impossible to fix it. The money all goes to the administrators and the coaches. The players are free labor. Of course, you can argue that they get an education. But how many, like Robert Smith at Ohio State, the great Buckeye running back, wanted to go through pre-med and was told, "I'm sorry, that's too difficult a curriculum. You can't go to pre-med and play football." So there's always an asterisk when you say they're there for to be student athletes.
Were you shocked, and I'm trying to compare this, trying to hook them together, were you shocked when all of these parents have recently been indicted for paying to get their kids into school?
Not shocked by that, and not shocked by this other Michigan State story coming out. There's going to be a movie now that was that debuted at the Tribeca Film Festival about the whole Larry Nassar thing at Michigan State, and it's going to be very, very ugly. And one of the titles and one of the lines to sell it is, how much is a little girl worth is what the Rachel Denhollen said. But you know what it comes down to again?
How much more ugly can it get?
It can't. And you know what? The administration's wrong. NASA is wrong. The USA Gymnastics is wrong. But the bottom line is the parents let their kids get involved in these things. And how is it described?
Well, that's not quite fair. You don't expect your daughter, your 13-year-old kid, to be molested by a coach.
Fair at all. You can't blame the parents for this.
Anyway, one interviewee calls it athletic Darwinism, where they're pushed from a very young age to withstand pain. They don't. Yeah. It's going to be an ugly movie.
Another mess. And I just want to say, since we're talking about money, I have discovered very recently that $8 million a year United States funds just doesn't buy the coach that it used to. For the third straight year, Babs is out. Babs is out for the third straight year in Toronto in the first round of the playoffs, making $8 million U.S. a year. One of Babs saying, well, it's great to have all this money, but I never sort of left Detroit, eh?
Yeah. Bring back Scotty and the Russians. Anyway, we have gone
over. Scotty and the Russians.
Now we're over an hour. What can we cut out of the show? Bob said he's going
to
give us. Bob say he's going
to
give us 10 minutes back for something? Anyway, thanks for joining us today on No Filter Sports. Tell your friends, please.
Everybody have a great week.
We'll see you
again.
Are
you going to make me an appointment at Yelda?
Yeah, you're all set.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.